Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Guys Podcast. We got asked an interesting question that Alex thought was intriguing, and it's really tough to pique Alex's interest. He's usually so monotone and bored, but this one actually got him with a little bit of, like, emotion in his voice. Oh, that's crazy. So we're going to talk about what we would do differently in gaming, specifically, like, if we had control, if we were in power, what would we do? What would that look like? And while I am not so narcissistic, egotistical, et cetera, to think that I could just, you know, take over a gaming company like Ubisoft and save them, I do think that my experience working with several companies, I can identify some things that I would say are flaws that they could do much better, which in turn for them would hopefully produce more profits. And then Alex has his thoughts as well. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. Also, you know, there's many things that actually excite me.
Are you saying this is a nuanced topic and it's not so easily fixed with, like, a quick cliche on a LinkedIn profile?
I would say so. I mean, if it was that easy, then why would certain companies be in trouble?
You say that, but at the same time, like, I look at not just gaming. I look at a lot of industries and I go, how the heck are they profitable? Like, how the heck are they solvent with, you know, some of the decisions you'll look at them make and you go, huh? I don't understand. But again, many things bewilder the mind. So for you, here's how I want to start. We'll lay this. What would be the area? We're just going to start with that first. What's the area that you think, like, if you were in control, that you would want to up and make better, improve upon, whatever department that is, that would result in a better relationship between game and gamer, which would, of course, from a business side, result in a more profitable situation, whether short term or long term? What's your area? And then I'll list mine.
To me, the biggest thing has always been technical quality. I get annoyed when things are not working well.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense, like, given you're an engineer.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense, right? And it's just like, there's so many, like, products, and not even just gaming, that I just, like, feel like they're just going down in quality. And it's a little unfortunate. And I feel that would be something that I would think. Like, I have stopped using programs or stopped playing games due to their technical.
And when you're saying technical, are you speaking like making QA better, the actual, you know, baseline, how the game is designed from an engine perspective? What exactly are you pointing to? Or is it an all of the above thing? Or is it just like quality?
Kind of all of the above. It's like, it's not like, usually it's not like one singular thing you can point to. But then it's also like, do you actually get the budget to, like, work on these things, right?
And that's the key, right? Because, like, one thing in America, I grew up and... I grew up, fun fact. But
who knew? Did you actually, though?
Yeah, I know. Great question. But I remember growing up, and one of the things that people talked about was like, oh, man, you don't get things overseas because they're so cheaply made. And as I got older and talked to more people, and even in the gaming field, I've gotten to meet people in Germany, Sweden, India, you know, Japan, Korea, et cetera, all these different places, talk to them, learn. And you learn it's not because that, like, this area particularly just makes things in an inferior manner, right? You know, like, if you outsource something to South Korea or the Philippines or Taiwan or whatever, that doesn't mean that you're going to get an inferior product. It means that you're trying to get a cheaper product. Because this comes back to, a lot of times, the quality is dipping because, well, you're trying to make the most profitable product at the lowest cost, which is kind of how the market works. But sometimes that pursuit for profit can cut your quality so much that you end up pulling an Ubisoft where, hey, we're trying to make all this money, and the quality dips so far, now you're at a point where there might not be, like, my kids might not grow up with Assassin's Creed Ubisoft games, at least how Ubisoft exists now, right? So it's that fine dance, that balance between, you want to have great quality, but do you have the funds to finance that quality, and then you make enough profit after that quality has been released to further get more investment from people that they'll say, yeah, let's do that again.
Yeah, I think a lot of like the like going down in quality and like reducing the budgets to actually like create quality products in many different fields, including gaming, has been like sort of fueled by like we have to be bigger, we have to grow more quicker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like let's build something that's like with a very solid good foundation and just do like a you know long slow steady growth, it's just like we have to shoot to the moon immediately.
Yeah. Right? And so,
which you can't do if you spend a lot of time, you know, on things that are like, does it make like the product completely unusable? No, but it creates more friction.
And for me, because I don't know, we're talking about the quality of things. For me, if I could be in this situation, the main thing that I would want to adapt, change, etc., is, and you and I talked about this a little bit before the show, because I wanted to get my thoughts out and honestly kind of use you as a whiteboard and bounce off you, but I really feel like games don't listen to players in a way that affects change, profit, et cetera. To the point that I said to you, I feel like when we were younger, before the internet, not that quite far, but you know, when we were younger, back in like the early 2000s, the late 90s, it felt like gaming companies as a general whole, and I know I'm making a gross generalization here, but as a group, listen to what their players, but more importantly, what their product should be. It was influenced more by players than it is today, right? And I know that sounds a little weird because we live in an age where we have YouTube, we have TikTok, Instagram, we have these big meetups where you actually meet with these companies, you have content creators talking to them every single day. And yet it feels like the direction of gaming is less influenced by gamers and more influenced by a lot of outside sources, whether that be investors, whether that be certain cultural movements, et cetera. Not everything feels like it's being led by the people who at the end of the day buy the product and consume the product. And for me, that'd be a big area that I would want to adjust. I want to feel like my game, if I was in control of that company, or my, you know, brand, if in the case I had multiple IPs that I was pushing, was a very player-centric company. And again, I'm speaking very easier said than done. I'm also speaking without really acknowledging that, hey, maybe things are that way because of the whole profit thing and investor thing, which are very real arguments that, as we talked about, this is such a nuanced conversation. We can't really fix it in a 30-minute podcast. But that would be, for me, is wanting player voice to be stronger, more heard, and if nothing else, more acknowledged. You know, because I just don't feel like a lot of games do that.
Yeah, it does definitely feel like that the profit side of things has taken like the center stage compared to like back in the day when like the fun was the center stage of games.
Like you focused on your players first and then you got profit, and now it's more of we're trying to make a profitable game first and we hope the players come to the profitable game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it definitely feels like that. It's like not like 100% of all games. There's still great games coming out.
Absolutely.
Here and there, right? That are super fun. They're not charging you like, you know, $100+ for a silly skin or whatever. But it's gotten less. And I do think that the big, you know, investors and the legal obligations to investors does play a role in that, because you have to make more money.
Yeah.
And it's probably like a combination of like, okay, the scope of all the projects just grows. We talked about, you know, scope of project in an earlier podcast episode. But that probably plays into it because they get more and more expensive. So you have to put the money side more in a focus because, you know, there's a limit to growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like goes quick and then like slows down.
Yeah. And see, this also gets in, and not to get too in the weeds, this gets into like games choosing to be the microtransaction style versus being the traditional triple or quadruple A style where almost all that money is going to be made in the front end, right? Where so many companies are now choosing to release things like Scopely does, or like, you know, other companies do, where we'll maintain the game for a long time, but you're going to have to pay consistently and in high chunks to stay competitive in those style of games. And and kind of to what I was saying before about communication in gaming needing to improve, the whole profit focus versus player focus, I think you can see in the style of major games, like the fact that games have been chasing like the battle royale format. If you look around gaming as an industry, and then you see extraction shooters now getting more popular, they chase this profitable trend versus just trying to make something that the players are saying, hey, I'll buy that. Maybe you don't buy as many copies, right? But you know that you'll get consistency. You know, to your point, the quality thing, I feel like we have, both of us can scream at a company called Bethesda. Like, I've loved Bethesda my entire life. And I'm not going to sit here and say I won't buy Fallout 5 when it comes out. But when it does finally come out, it will likely have happened 2 decades after Fallout 4. And I'm not just trying to gloss over 76, but 76 is actually an example of what I'm talking about, because Fallout 76 was an example of Bethesda chasing what was profitable and high at the time, which was making an MMO, right? Because when they released 76, that was still real big, coming off the tails of a lot of really well-known MMOs that are out there. And Fallout 76 fell really flat, and they had to invest a lot of time, man hours, to make it better, to get the Fallout community to invest in it. And between that and the other titles they have, you know, Skyrim came from them, obviously, and they created Starfield. That's pushed one of their major titles that people have been asking for that they know will make money. Like, you know, right now, Fallout 5, if it were to release today, if it were quote unquote available, would sell copies. I don't want to just pull a number out my rear, but given the popularity of it, the fact that there's a TV show, I don't think it would be out of the world to say that it would sell millions of copies. It's more of a question, maybe how many. So, you know, it's a profitable thing, but because they were chasing that high, like, can we get the most profit possible? You backlogged what is something that you knew would make money, just maybe not as much, right? I think that's an issue.
No, that's a big issue. I mean, I don't necessarily, like, for me, for example, I don't necessarily see, like, microtransactions as, like, the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of appeal to have more consistent income as a company. It's less risk, right? When you can, like, have, like, the consistent income and fund your ongoing developments with that consistent income, instead of being like, we have to, like, our next project needs to be a massive success, otherwise we have to downsize our company by, you know, 50% or whatever. It's you know, that. So, well, on that side, you know, Maybe the industry as a whole maybe has gone a little overboard on the whole microtransaction thing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, going to one of the things that I would change if I was in charge of a gaming company, I would also shoot for smaller teams. And I've noticed this with Star Trek Fleet Command, who I've worked with. I've noticed this to a degree with NetEase when I worked with them a few years ago for Eve Echoes. It wasn't a long period, but it was a little bit. And what I've noticed with a lot of companies I've personally worked with is the community team spends a very small percentage of their daily work life actually with the community. Now, again, I'm not saying that to take shots at these companies I've gotten to work with and who have let me see how things work. I am actually very appreciative of that. But what I've noticed from so many companies, and I promise I'm not trying to, like, be like Microsoft and just kill people's jobs, but I will say that a lot of times, so many of these companies are bloated in terms of staff. And what ends up happening is they have so many meetings. They have more meetings maybe in one day than they actually have productivity in that day. You know, to use Star Trek Fleet Command as an example, because so many people here listen and talk about Star Trek Fleet Command, there are multiple times that the game design teams and the community teams will have a day that is nothing but meetings and no time actually scheduled to say, if you're the community manager, to go into the Discord, spend 2 hours, answer questions. Doesn't exist. There's no time for that. You've got to sit with this ops team. You've got to sit with this management team. You got all these different things. One thing that I would push for is a more efficient, downscaled system of communication where if you're in community, your focus is being out in the community. So you can truly bring back feedback once a week in a meeting. You know, I'm not saying that meetings are bad. I think meetings are very good. But when it becomes a thing where you have so many, you lose efficiency in how much value that meeting can bring you, right? So I think that it's a silly concept to have a community team for a gaming company that spends less than 50% of their time with the game. And maybe that's just me being, you know, naive, but like if your role in terms of like as a game is to connect to the player base, like that's what that entire department is designed around, then on average, the department should have 50% or more of its time. A majority of its time should be in with the players. Now you can, you know, layer that and scale that where obviously the management side of that department will not do as much as the lower end side, you know, the you know, player facing, you know, of that group. But I can't name a game I've ever worked with where the community side spent more than 50% of their working time with players in any capacity. Can't name a single one. And to me, that's a flaw. That's how the voices are never heard.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to know something that's like very silly and kind of embarrassing, I guess? I work at a big gaming company and I have honestly absolutely no clue what our community team does.
I mean, it's fair.
None whatsoever.
Again, we're definitely not trying to dump on any particular company, but I do think that the paradigm that companies approach players has shifted to a point where there is a disconnect. And this is not just a Scopely STFC thing. If you're an STFC player listening, this is not just a EA and you're a Madden franchise player and you feel like they've not been listening to you for, you know, two decades. It's not any particular company. It's just the industry as a whole, I feel, has lost the connection of that daily player-to-player, player-to-dev interaction. And the games that I really fall in love with maintain that. You know, an example is a little indie one that I've talked to you about called Manor Lords. Start off as one guy, one dev, working with people. Hey, this is what I'm making, sharing it with you. If you want to support, great. And then when he finally launches his alpha, it grosses like 80 million. So what does he do? He hires a team to help him, but they maintain that activity with the players the entire time. That is a key we cannot lose. And we're going to tell you, hey, this pathway logic has to get fixed because of your feedback. And that relationship, even though that game is severely flawed, the sentiment towards that game is insanely high to the point you have players recommending friends buy it, even though it's an incomplete game. Right. And I think that's what more studios should try to capture with their community side of things. Like, there, believe it or not, you can have your players happy with a flawed product if your players feel like they're involved in the product.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I personally would be like, let's not create flawed product to begin with. But.
And you know, curious, I mean, for you, like, how do you look at the quality of the stuff? Because I know your concern is like the man hours. Like, are we going to be given the man hours to do, you know, the QA needed, the engine redesign needed, if that's applicable? You know, maybe that company doesn't have their own engine, but whatever it is, how's that work for your side? Like, how, what would you specifically change to try to make that in the wonderful world of Alex's game?
Oh, I mean, it's sort of not much to say, but it's also a very complicated topic you could talk about for a very long time.
That is the most Alex answer of all time. There's nothing I can tell you, but it would take me hours to tell you.
Wow. I mean, I guess part of it also comes down to communication.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of... what's the best word? I guess siloing happening. A lot of teams don't really talk to each other as much as they probably should.
Mm-hmm.
Which sort of probably a bit of a side effect of how big these teams have gotten. Right. If you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of people working on a thing, there's not like this natural just like, oh, if you have like a, you know, 50 people person team or whatever, they can all fit in a single office and like probably just chat whenever, right? But if, when you get to like hundreds or thousands, there's like people you don't even know exist, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they also work on something that you work on, but you don't, you know, you don't know. And then it's just like, you know, those communication channels. And I think that creates a lot of disconnect and like makes coordinating and creating something that actually works well together way more complicated.
And this is where project managers come in, because like I'm talking about wanting to downsize things because of how much meetings can muddy the waters. But the larger a project goes or becomes, the more you do need, you know, more people. So like that, it's a fine line, right? Like I believe that a great game doesn't need a massive community team as long as that team is managed well. And what they need to pass on goes directly to who it needs to be, right? Right. So like, for example, in my gaming company, there's no reason community ever needs to message Alex, because Alex is a systems engineer working on the engine. Why would the community team ever need to be bothering him, meeting with him, etc.? I'm sure maybe you can think of a reason, but probably not, since you don't even know what your community team does. And yet, I say that to say, you know, I know multiple companies that the community team works directly with various elements of game design. And not that I'm trying to say community is important. I just think that that is a little bit of a waste. The only transference needs to probably be through a single entity who says, hey, this is what we have, and passes on the information, and then you work with it. And to me, community in my dream world is spending the majority of its time as a group with the players playing the game, because that's a big one, man. Like, I understand why you, as an engineer, you don't need to play Football Club to understand Football Club, right? To design the engine that runs Football Club. I get that. But I do believe that people who are in like community, they need to be right there with the players. Like, you need to be experiencing what they're experiencing, or at least able to be around enough to understand why they're frustrated, why they're experiencing that, right? And a big example from STFC lately has been, well, Star Trek Fleet Command has been rerunning the same style of event that we've already given feedback on that we don't want, we don't like. Every time you do this, we scream really loudly, you don't make money from it, why do you keep doing this? To me, that's a failing of not understanding your player base and what they want, right? So that's what I would want to change. And from a quality standpoint, that's, to me, I think that kind of goes back to the example I gave with Manor Lords. Like, if you do have that close relationship with your community, you're given more leeway to have problems, but also you're given more loyalty from that player base, which more loyalty results in more profit, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's different sides to the quality, like performance, at least in my opinion. Like, if you launch your game, you have run it internally on all the systems. If it doesn't run well on a console, then maybe you should have fixed it before you actually released it. You know,
That's one of those timetables, and we've got to make money at this day, no matter what, for the investors comes in, right? Gotta
come out. Yeah. But also back to your community point, I think maybe, and I don't think maybe game companies do that enough, where like game design, the game designers, and you know, maybe also producers, should probably be active part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
As in, they should have like part of their week should be like allocated to like participating within the community and like actually like, you know, reading what people are saying and responding and like, you know, having conversations here and there.
Yeah, even if they're short, like even if, because here's one of the things that I advocated for in Star Trek Fleet Command. I said, hey, you would make strides with the community if you had a once a week, 1 hour open Q&A. And I'll also preface, like, don't just let all the trolls come in saying like quality over quantity, like have all the things live grabbed by your, you know, your volunteers, shoot them to them, and then you just keep banging them out. Right. And if you did that consistently, if you did that 52 times a year, it's only 1 hour a week, But if you did that 52 times a year, the sentiment that you would have, the loyalty, the feeling like you're heard, even if you did not always, because let's just be honest, right? Players, no matter what dream scenario we make up, are never going to get 100% of what they want because what everybody wants is different. Right. Not everybody wants the same thing in the game. Like it's, I run into that with STFC all the time. Like people are like, well, why are they running this event on a Tuesday? Well, because internal metrics say most of you play on Tuesday. So that's why they do it. Like it might inconvenience you, but the people you don't realize are playing it a lot. So you'll never make everybody happy, but it's, to me, it's very underrated in gaming today of how important sentiment is. I just don't really feel like sentiment is given the nod that it should be. And I look at other games that exist like Dragon Age that bombed because of sentiment, even though it was a great name. And then you look at other games that had amazing sentiments, even though it came out with some flaws like Baldur's Gate, but it had a great story. It had a great connection. They were clearly trying to make active changes to problems they had. There was that connection. And then that game still has really high play rates, high retention rates. And even though it's gotten to the stage where there's no more like real major updates coming for it, everybody now is going to look at back at that game as being, man, that was just such a great game. I can't wait to the next one. You know, and that's what I would want to cultivate in my game. I want that. Even if my game's not perfect, I want that sentiment to last. And that way, 5-10 years from now, you have the Rev Deuce who, because he fell in love with Fallout 4, the flawed, and don't get me wrong, if y'all have never played it, Fallout 4 is a flawed game. But at the same time, is a deep game that draws you in and you fall in love with it. That's the type of game I want to make. And when you have the connection with that studio to player, to me, that's what made the Ubisofts and the Bethesdas, you know, have these, you know, 30-year runs, 20-year runs, the Treyarchs, you know, all have decades-long runs because they had that. And I just don't feel enough companies have that anymore.
Yeah.
And no, you just want to fix the quality. Alex just wants a good game.
I do just want a good game, you know?
And I think, honestly,
a game that's fun. I want like people just like, you know, don't design for monetization or whatever. Design for fun.
Yeah, it's kind of what we said before. I mean, I believe monetization will come by itself, right? You know, and to me, a great example of that is, and I always reference Star Trek Fleet Command the most because it's what I've worked with the most. But like that game has got some of the worst sentiment, and yet still makes money because at the end of the day, the people not. Just because they love that it's Star Trek, but at the end of the day, the people love the community. And because they love where they're at and they want to stay, then they're still willing to invest in it, right? But just imagine how much more you could get, especially when it comes to player retention. For any company, I'm not just trying to single out Scopely here. You know, if you had positive sentiment versus negative, right? If you didn't have like the first thing that comes together when your name is mentioned is a meme, a negative meme. Right. And there are those about companies like EA and stuff. And I do think some companies have tried to shift that. I've tried to give credit to EA for the sports titles. And yes, Rev likes sports titles. I grew up with Madden. Right. I love the NHL one. I'm not saying I buy them every year or even play them every year.
I used to play a lot of FIFA.
Yeah. I mean, like I would call myself a loyal follower of EA in that regard. And not everything's been great, but I do feel like they've started to kind of click a little bit like, hey, we really need to listen more and focus more on the fun elements, not the over-monetization elements, because it's hurting us long-term. You know, and it's my hope that more and more companies pick up on that. And again, the whole premise of this episode was the dream world. Well, I think a big thing to get us in that dream world is having better community teams, you know, people who are actually involved with the community to make that game better and last longer. And then for you, the quality, like, I don't know, just code better. Just get gooder. I don't know. What do you...
No.
Stop making so many damn bugs.
It's a lot more complicated than that.
No, you told me. You couldn't even tell me. It's just... You just get gooder. Just get gooder.
No, it's a lot of investment into tooling, something that players will never see. And that takes money.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But I think, like, ignoring quality because, you know, you can get there and then usually, you know, I guess you can stay fine once you've got to a point that's actually not bad. Design for fun. playtest, iterate, and if something doesn't work, try again.
Mm-hmm.
Until you find something that's fun. And only then give it to the players.
Fun focus, I like it. I mean, it's simplistic in its like nature in terms of like, it kind of is a gaming cliche, but I also think that doesn't take away from the truth of it and the accuracy of it. Because like even Scopely will have those type of mantras. And I know this is going to be hard for people to hear, but not every Scopely game has negative sentiment like STFC does. Like they don't. Not all of them are like that, right? That's, you know, these are all individual studios and individual products and IPs, just like Bethesda has. Even though I like Starfield and I've said it, I'm not going to sit here and lie to people listening. Starfield probably will not get a Starfield 2. Even though I like Starfield, I think it, because of all the things that we've been talking about, was released as a flawed product and just is not able to become what it should be. I think Starfield, unless Bethesda, you know, flips on us, is probably never going to be what it should be. And it was really hurt by the fact that the first DLC for that was really bad. And it kind of goes to what you were saying, where it wasn't something that was designed to be fun. It was designed to be monetized, right? And I don't think Starfield can recover from that. I think Fallout and, you know, Skyrim, well, the series of Skyrim, Elder Scrolls, all those can be fine. But, you know, it's just one of those that sometimes you dig yourself into a hole and you just have to leave that hole, you know, and just move on. So
quality. Yeah.
Anything else you'd add to your quality game? Espresso machines, ping pong tables. What do you need? What makes you more efficient?
No meetings. Less meetings. So, I don't know. Less meetings.
So you're with me though that sometimes meetings can be too numerous. Like we don't need to have one every day.
Yeah, and sometimes a lot of them also feel very repetitive. And then you know.
Yeah.
You know, it happens less where I work, but because our manager's also pretty good in shielding us from a lot of things. But like there's people in like certain areas that get invited to so many meetings, and like I feel like 80% of them, they don't even need to be there.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was saying earlier with the whole community thing. Like you put them in so many meetings, the effect of that meeting loses its efficiency, as in the feedback you're trying to give or what you're trying to teach loses its value because you've spent so much time in this room, you've now lost the ability to apply it or the ability to find out if what you wanted to try out or experiment on or change would have had a positive effect, right? Because you're just spending too much time away from the end product. And I feel like that's not even a gaming thing. A lot of companies have that struggle where you spend way too much time inter-discussing these topics that need to be out in the field, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, you know, if you're getting paid to do a job, then you need to be able to go do your job. And most times people are not getting paid to sit in meetings. You're getting paid to be an engineer or a driver or a designer, right? You're not getting paid to sit in meetings. So the more time you're doing that is, from a business perspective, that's a lost revenue, right? If I've got a systems engineer like Alex and I'm paying him, you know, $400 an hour, because obviously that's what everybody in game studios makes. If I'm paying you $400 an hour and you're doing 1 hour of meetings every week, that means I've now paid you $2,000 a week to not work. Like, see, so like that's how I view meetings. And a lot of that's because of what I was taught from when I was in IT and trying to do, you know, work in that business field. One, all my clients were kind of the same way. Like, do not waste my time with a 30-minute or a 60-minute meeting for IT unless we really need it, right? Like you really need to educate something. You really need to get something out. Don't have a meeting with me for 30 minutes and tell me about the latest update to Windows. Just do what you need to do. And if it's serious, let me know. Right.
Yeah.
And that was taught to me by my boss at the time. Like, hey, look, they don't need to know everything. They just need to know what they need to know. And it might sound like another silly cliche, but there's truth to that cliche. Right. Community team does not need to know everything that game design is doing, but game design might need to know important details from community and vice versa. And it's just that shielding process, like you're talking about with managers or whatever. And I think that's just a problem that I noticed when I was working in IT for some companies. And, you know, I've seen in gaming companies that sometimes you're just spending more time, you know, sitting in a chair versus sitting with the players in the instance of gaming. So, but anyway, now we're kind of talking about the same thing over and over, but I think people will understand what we're meaning.
I think so.
Well, if you enjoyed this show, hit the like button. There's no like button to hit. Actually, there is a little heart. You can hit the heart. But if you enjoy Alex, if you give Alex a lot of love, he might take a shirt off and send pics. Mm. But nothing else. I hope you enjoyed and learned a little bit. And I do want to say a thank you to people like Seathan and Danny and Comms, all the people who will comment and leave like, hey, we would like to learn this. And if you listen to the show, you should do the same thing, because I enjoy this little interludes we have together where we learn. And it helps me think about the industry different, because I'm in a point where I'm deciding, well, where am I going to go in this industry? Am I going to go join Alex? I don't know if that's not how that works, but Alex would get me a job if he could. I'd be the janitor at EA, but he'd get me that job, dang it. But I do think it's really fun to talk about gaming as a industry and where it's going, because, well, obviously I'm passionate about games, but honestly, it is really cool because there's so many, it's kind of like I talk about Star Trek. There's a Star Trek for everybody. There is a game and a gaming studio for everybody.
Yeah. Very diverse.
So we'll catch y'all on the next podcast episode, and y'all let us know what you'd like to hear. We'll see you then. This is where you say bye, Alex. Jeez.
Goodbye.
Jesus. Oh, my Lanta. Gosh, you don't appreciate. No, see, this is what I was just talking about. Communication, community.
I missed my cue. I'm sorry.
Okay, it's all good. Love you.
Do you really?